This is The Express with Gary Allen, your 360-degree view of the world. Now, here's your host, Gary Allen.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to this edition of The Express. It's been a while since we talked. We had Hurricane Harvey, then we had Hurricane Irma, and thank God Hurricane Maria is going to miss the United States. However, the poor people that are living in some of the islands, such as Jamaica and Puerto Rico and some of the islands just before it, are getting devastatingly destroyed as we speak. For those of you who haven't seen pictures of what Key West used to look like, it's a combat zone. It looks like somebody dropped a bomb on it and just left it there. They showed here locally, I don't know if they did it nationally or not, what Jimmy Johnson's house used to look like. But anyway, welcome to The Express, Gary Allen with you. Hope your lives are, for those of you that have been involved with Harvey or Irma, your lives are starting to get back together again. We are here in Central Florida as well doing that. Before we get to my guest tonight, I just want to tell you that we've got some great stuff coming up for you. Ray Abruzzo, who was supposed to be on with us until Hurricane Harvey decided to show up in Texas, has rebooked, and he'll be joining us in just about another month. So I'm excited about that. Ray Abruzzo, who was a member of the cast of The Sopranos and a lot of other people. I have a great guest on with me tonight as well. He'll be calling in just a couple of minutes. But for those of you that wish to follow me, go to Gary Allen, A-L-A-N, on Facebook, YouTube.com, Gary Allen Express. And please, folks, if you could, encourage your friends to go in there, and even if they just click on it, that they clicked on the show, or if I send it out to you Facebook, just click on it, and I need to start getting some numbers together. I'm not getting anything out of it. I know if you get so much with YouTube, you get something free. I have no idea what that is. I don't care about that. I just need to start showing some other numbers. On Thursday night, our guest is with us, and we'll be joining Peter in just a minute. On Thursday night at 7 o'clock, of course, the show repeats itself on diversitybroadcastnetwork.com. On Friday afternoon or sometime over the weekend, it'll be on progressivevoices.com. And then it's also on TuneIn, through the app with the TMV Cafe. And so I'm excited about that. I've got some other things to tell you about as we progressively move forward over the next couple of weeks. And it's good to be back. It's thanks to the two hurricanes, it's been something else again. My guest tonight is a gentleman that I know on a personal level, which is good. It turns out I know a lot of my guests, or I get to know them, but I've known Peter for a number of years. Peter Alden is one of the most extraordinary entertainers in the world. He grew up in a musical family. He went to Florida Southern College. He is classically trained as a performer. He's an Elvis. He does a number of shows around the country. He has performed in Memphis, Tennessee at the House of Blues. He was also a member of the legendary troupe Legends in Concert and traveled around the country with them in Branson, Myrtle Beach, Pittsburgh, and Dallas. He's also performed on cruise ships. He has performed to sellout crowds wherever he goes. He also happens to have his own band, which they perform tunes from the 50s and 60s, the Crown Electric Company, and we'll get to that, how he got that name. He also does a thing with a Roy Orbison impersonator, and I love Roy Orbison. Love him, love him, love him. He does a thing called Elvis and Roy, the concert, the Lost Concert. And there's so many other things to tell you about this gentleman. But Peter Alden is a dear friend of mine. He's also one of the most talented gentlemen that I know of. And he's a pretty darn good Elvis impersonator as far as I'm concerned. And every time I see him, he always is all shook up. So I don't know. Anyway, Mr. Peter Alden, welcome to The Express.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, I just, you know, I was telling everybody about the, you know, the hurricane, and I didn't get involved in too much of that. But I can attest to the fact that it was a week ago tonight that we were still, I mean, we had just gotten our electricity back over here in the Cocoa Beach area. You were without electricity up until when? Just a couple of days ago, right?
Just a couple of days ago. I know that the power crews were working their butts off to get everybody back online. So, you know, I'd like to do a huge shout out to all those guys who have been really, really working hard to make sure that everybody gets back online and back with power and all that kind of stuff. I know that's hard work, especially when everybody's yelling at you, wanting to know when am I going to be back on? When am I going to be back on? And, yeah. So they all those crews, all those guys and women, they all worked really hard. So,
and you know, in comparison to the residents who live south of us, the Keys on the western side of Florida and the islands that are getting ravaged again tonight and tomorrow as we speak, and the people in Houston, we have nothing to really complain about, Peter. We really don't. I mean, thank God.
No, you're definitely right about that. It was certainly on a good note, it was certainly less than what a lot of people were saying was going to be. Mm-hmm. So we're fortunate in this area. We're certainly fortunate about that. Yeah. being so landlocked, we usually don't get the full brunt. We've gotten a few, but not usually the full brunt. Not like the people down on the coasts get. God bless them. They choose to live there and they want to live there. And you know, 99.9% of the time, we're all jealous of them. So
yeah, well, not any, well. They're in, for those of you who excuse me, are not familiar with what we're talking about. We're talking about the Keys and down in Sanibel and. Island and Fort Myers and Marco Island, the beautiful areas out into the Gulf. But in many cases, they are no more. As a matter of fact, there are islands in the Keys that are gone. The islands are there, but there's no homes there anymore. Everything is totally destroyed, and we're very lucky. I went through Andrew. I was not here for the three hurricanes that came across the state. But they are getting more vicious, and I my heart goes out to the people of Puerto Rico and the Dominican and all the islands that were hit today. According to what I saw on the Weather Channel, Peter, the one island, and I can't remember the name, that's in the Lesser Antilles that was hit twice. The mayor got on somehow today and just said, it's gone. There's nothing left. And these hurricanes are category 5. This is the most potent. This hurricane is more potent, more vicious, more intense than Irma. So my prayers and thoughts, I'm sure, as you would say, also are out to all these people.
Absolutely.
Tonight. All right. Let's get into Peter Alden. Like I said, I was racking my brain. I know you and I have performed together a couple of times. I don't necessarily remember all of them. The last time we got together, we had more fun than we did any kind of performing. That's for sure. It was just kind of walking around and being ourselves. And it is amazing how people come up to you as an Elvis impersonator. And he's beautiful. I mean, he's got the costumes. He's got the look. He's got everything down. And unfortunately, in front of Peter, I do this all the time, and I don't know why I do it, but I used to do it to all the Elvis impersonators in Vegas when people take a picture, and I go, hey, folks, doesn't he look great for a guy that's been in formaldehyde for a while? I don't know why I do that, but I have done that, and I told you the story about in Vegas with one Elvis impersonator that I won't repeat on this show. Peter, you grew up in a musical family. But that doesn't always acquaint itself with you going into the direction of music. So as a child, what your mom and dad did must have been an extremely heavy influence on you to head in that direction. And you must have understood and recognized early that you had the talent to do it.
Well, it's interesting. Both of my parents' influence was more on the classical music side. Mm-hmm. My father, especially, he was a choir director and eventually became the chairman of the music department at the University of Florida. And they influenced me. We had classical music usually playing throughout our house most of the time. And I didn't realize how much it sunk in until I actually you know, I actually got to college myself, because I was a teenager. I didn't want to listen to classical music. that was certainly not my first choice. But I got into college and taking some electives, and I actually had a class that I had to take to called How to Listen.
I know a lot of people who are not in the music industry should take that class anyway.
That's definitely true. Yeah. It was called How to Listen, and basically picking out instruments and figuring out what different styles are, what are madrigals, all kinds of classical terms that I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I know all this stuff because this is what I grew up listening to, is my father did, and what I was exposed to over and over and over again. So my first exposure into music, of course, was through classical music. I did take piano lessons for a number of years. My thing, unfortunately, as with a lot of people who start out on an instrument, I just did not enjoy practicing. It was not something I liked to do. So I let it slip away, which I'm sorry about now, because, it would certainly come in handy. I can still pick out chords and things like that. And I still know how to read music. That was the one thing, a plus that I got through being classically trained, is I learned how to read music. So, I can do that. And, when I was at Florida Southern College, Beverly Wolf was on staff there, and she was quite a big star in the opera world. Mm-hmm. And when she retired, she moved down to Florida, and was teaching voice lessons at Florida Southern College. And I was fortunate to take lessons with her for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. So now I'm not sure really what she would think of me doing what I did with her lessons, but she was an incredible teacher, and I feel very blessed to have had taken lessons with her.
I'll tell you one thing. When I watch you perform, and as you well know, I lived in Las Vegas for a lot of years, so I certainly have seen my fair share, probably more than my fair share, of Elvis impersonators of all shapes and all sizes. But it's like the difference between Frank Sinatra. You are Frank Sinatra, and other people are just somebody that's just walked in on the street that just has a nice voice. And when I talk to people about what separated Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett and the great singers from just some guy who has a good voice, you are a prime example of it. Now, I don't know that they were classically trained. I don't know about Tony Benedetto. I've worked with Tony. I met Frank a couple of times. But I think your classical training, like all jazz artists have told me, a good basis of classical training helps jazz artists. And I'm sure it helps you in what you do now, because it seems like when you grab a hold of it, the song, and you learn how to phrase. And that's so very important compared to some guy who I call a Johnny Bag of Donuts, who some people in this town think, who thinks he's a really good singer because he was on one of those American Idol shows. And I keep trying to tell them he has a nice voice, but he's not Frank Sinatra. You know,
right.
I think the difference when you have a good basis of classical training, Peter, and is you learn how to deal with the notes, how to phrase, how to look at it. You know, you look at it different than somebody that doesn't have the kind of training you do. And I'm sure she'd be very proud of you today, because what you do on stage is more than just singing. You are a complete showman in every way, shape, and form.
Well, I appreciate that, Gary. And
I've worked with you enough to know the difference between any, you know, there's a lot of Elvis impersonators out there. There's a lot of other impersonators out there, but you really, you know, and I know you don't think for a minute you're Elvis. Thank God. Although you did ask me once to stop off at a Burger King on our way home. But no, there's a difference between somebody who's classically trained, and I want you to talk about that. Your roots, when you get training like that, do set you above other people. Then within that, I guess you develop your own style depending upon what you're doing.
Yeah, I think, you know, different things in life absolutely can help you. I like what you said about the classical training. I think that is where a lot of my knowledge of phrasing came into play. Mm-hmm. Because you do with classical music, there is a lot more to phraseology and how you phrase and where you breathe and things like that. So it absolutely does help. You know, quite honestly, just learning how to breathe correctly as a singer. The interesting thing is you breathe differently as a singer than you do as an instrumentalist.
Mm-hmm.
The way you breathe as a trumpet player or a saxophone player or a flute or clarinet or any type of instrument where you're using your air to make the notes, it's a different type of breathing that you use for that as opposed to singing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, which is not to say that you have to have that classical training to learn that. You can learn it from a good voice coach can certainly help you with that. As far as being a full-on entertainer, I think a lot of that, honestly, Gary, just came from doing it.
Yeah,
being out there, having people say, "Hey, stop! You're singing great, and you got great moves, but you don't talk, or you look at your feet, or your hands doing this, which comes from nerves."
Yeah.
And I remember one of my acting coaches had always said, "Never be worried about being nervous before you go out." Because if you're not nervous before you go out, that's when you know something's wrong.
Oh yeah.
If you think you've got this and you're not worried about anything, then you need to worry because nervousness is there to create an energy for you to use on stage. So
yes.
You've got to learn how to harness the nervous energy that you have and use that, as a form of energy for yourself. Look, nobody in the audience wants you to fail.
No,
they're all there to be entertained, and they want you to do well.
Well, unless you're at the Apollo Theater, and they love that stuff.
Well, they love that stuff. Okay, well, you know, it depends on what kind of audience you're there for.
But you know, the thing about you that really impresses me the most is you're just not a singer, and we're going to get into how you got into being an Elvis impersonator, etc. But you also performed in dramas and musical theater, in Carousel, The Fantastics, yes, which was one of my favorite Broadway plays, one of my favorite actors of all time, and Ray Abruzzo, who is going to be on this show from The Sopranos, got to work with him in Law and Order, and that was Jerry Arbach. He played
El Gallo in
The Fantastics. And then you are a Comedy of Errors, and then Bye Bye Birdie, which led into your Elvis stuff. But that's what separates you from a lot of other performers in my eyes, you know, in watching you, because you can compete with anybody because you've done it. You've been on the boards, you've sung, you've been trained, you've gotten out there. And, you know, that was one of the most important lessons that I was taught, as you were taught, was as a comedian. Now, as a singer, it's a little bit different. If you kind of goof up a lyric, somebody may know about it. But as a comic, I used to say to other comics, and it was told to me by my uncle, who was a comic, "Gary, don't worry about it. If you skip a couple of jokes that's in your routine, nobody's going to know about it but you."
Right.
You know, so you're in control on that stage. And for some reason, it is weird, man. You've just got to get out there and keep going and going and doing and doing and doing. You know, it's like being a talk show host. You got to keep doing it in order to get better. And one of these days, I'm going to get better. I don't know when, you know.
Well, when you do, call me, because I would like to see you when you get better.
Yeah, you know, it's like my brother Greg said to me. He said, you know, Gary, I know you know where it's at. I just don't know why you don't go and get it. You know, it's
right.
But Peter, Bye Bye Birdie was the emphasis for you to move forward as an Elvis impersonator. But first and foremost, when did you realize that A, I can make a living in this business, and B, I want to get into the tribute side of it?
I was actually heading in a musical theater direction. As you said, I had done several different things. I had always had an affinity for Elvis. I had always been a fan. So when the opportunity came up to do Bye Bye Birdie, I thought, well, okay, I'm at a point where I'm young enough and I can do this part.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate that we had a director that so many times with musical theater, all you have is a piano player. And for most shows that works very well, but for something that's considered a rock and roll musical like Bye Bye Birdie or Grease or Jesus Christ Superstar, something like that, you need more than just a piano. You need to create that kind of sound. And I was fortunate that we had a director that wanted to do that. And we put a little combo together to be the band for Conrad Birdie, which obviously was the part that I played in the show. Mm-hmm. And my director had said, just watch stuff of Elvis in the 50s. Don't watch anything else. Just watch 50s, everything from the 50s. Mm-hmm. And he actually said, you know, even watch some of the old Alan Freed movies, with Tommy Sands and some of those guys, see how they carried themselves and how they acted and everything.
It was it was different, wasn't it?
Oh, it was very different.
And, they talked. They seemed to talk different. They seemed to act different. It was just. It was a kind of a weird time. I'm kind of glad. Even though I was born in the 50s, I kind of missed it. I was in the 60s.
Right. Well, I was born in the 60s too. I missed the 50s as well. But. But it, you know, it was so it was a great show, and we got really, you know, I got great reactions when I was doing all the moving around for the Conrad Birdie stuff, and this was actually about the time that the Stray Cats were hitting America with Rock This Town and Stray Cat Strut, and they were pretty hot at the time. And so the guys in the band and I talked about it, and we learned some Stray Cat stuff, some Elvis stuff, and Carl Perkins and Johnny Cash. And we started just kind of as a rockabilly band playing fraternity parties and things like that. And it really just snowballed from there. I was not necessarily dressing like Elvis. I was trying to move around because that's always what I always got the reaction, but it was only just on the Elvis stuff. I, you know, if I was singing Johnny Cash or Jerry Lee Lewis or something, but I just would try to entertain because I didn't have an instrument with me at the time. So just moving around and trying to entertain was what I did. But I didn't, you know, I certainly wasn't polished. I had an old pink shirt that my dad wore in the 50s. And some gray slacks and a pair of white bucks. You know, that was kind of what I wore.
That'll do it.
But we did. You know, we did really well, and it was fun. It really was fun, you know, everybody was in different periods in their college life. So guys graduated and guys left and develop different musical interests. So, you know, the band stayed together as long as we could, but it was a good learning experience for me. And, I mean, cause there was no background tracks per se. Karaoke was just kind of in its infancy,
right.
And you would have to go to they didn't even have it at a hotel. You would have to go to like these booths that they had at the fairs, and you would record a song, and they had like a choice of like 20 songs. It was just in its infancy. So there was no kind of, oh, I'll just get some background tracks and do shows. That wasn't there.
Yeah.
So it was putting bands together and getting bands together and finding guys that could play it, wanted to play it. I mean, that's the difference. There are plenty of people out there that could play it, but did they like that kind of music? That's right. The whole key.
Right. I mean, we're talking to Peter Allen, extraordinary entertainer. You can find out more about him on PeterAllenEntertainment.com or PeterAldenLive.com, PeterAldenEntertainment.com. Check him out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. And, of course, Krista, thank you so much for all the information that she sent. But I don't know what you do without that woman, but hopefully we don't have to find out. But when did it get into the Elvis thing more than the 50s, 60s or the rockabilly?
I had gotten approached to do an Elvis show at an American Legion, and they wanted strictly an Elvis show. They had a band there that was going to play, and so I came in, rehearsed with them, and so that was the first time I'd in an actually an entire Elvis show, and it was fun. I enjoyed it. And so I started looking. Now, the funny thing is back then, though, I swore up and down, I will never put one of those suits on. I'm going to do, the 50s look for the rest of my life. And I will never put one of those suits on. And then I think somebody said, hey, listen, we've got a show for you. We need you to wear a suit. We'll pay you this much. And I said, okay, well, then let me find a suit.
Oh, God. You also have taken the... you've also performed at Disney, Universal Studios, as I said, the House of Blues, Legends in Concert. So the Elvis thing has really worked well for you, and you've worked well for it. And I think that's what needs to be said here. There are a lot of Elvis impersonators, but Peter Alden, you're one of the best as far as I'm concerned, because you really have captured everything that he was and who he was. You don't know this, of course, but I got to meet him. I got to meet him in the White House when he came to visit the president, Richard Nixon. And he was very nice. Crazy, but nice. He wanted to spy on the show business community. He was, as Christopher Walken would say, crazy. Just whack job. Crazy. But, you really had to sit there and watch Elvis, because you and I both know a lot of lookalikes. They don't really... they just think they look like it and they can go through the motions. You really put it together.
Well, so many of them just watch each other. And I, Gary, I was fortunate to be around at a time, there are times in your life and during the days that you smack your head against the wall for certain things. But I was actually blessed to be around at a time when, I had to audition for things. I had to really go out and get things based on my talent, and not so much because I won this or that. I actually had to go out and get the things and have people see me. And as I look back, I say blessed because it's nice to know that I was able to do some things that I don't know if I could do now. Simply because of the nature of where that particular business is. I don't know if I would get the same opportunities that I had gotten, because I've been able to see so much of the world, bringing Elvis's music to people all over the world and getting a chance to perform it for people. And it was just a blessing to be able to go and see so many things that I know if it had been another time or another place, I might not have been able to do so many of those things. And, it's one of the things that Krista reminds me of on a daily basis. Sometimes she'll sit me down and say, look, you need to realize how, blessed your life really is.
Because there are a lot of entertainers out there, Peter Alden. We're talking to the entertainer, Peter Alden, who is an extraordinary performer. Check him out on Peter Alden entertainment.com and peteraldenlive.com, and we're going to talk about where he's going to be performing down the road here. But you are very lucky. It is so difficult to be a success in this business, in any part of it, and you are a tremendous success. Of all the lookalikes that are out of Central Florida, you're probably the one that's working the most, and you have to get out there. And you, something that I want you to talk to about to my audience is about, you know, the marketing aspect of your career. You have Krista, I have myself, but you have Krista to help you. And that's so very important. Beyond the talent, beyond anything else, it's the marketing. It's show the size of a quarter business. It's the size of a football field. Talk about that and what you and Krista go through on a daily basis as far as booking gigs, getting gigs, and the marketing to get those gigs.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's a very important aspect, and it's so wonderful to have someone that can help you do that. And just as a quick example, when you're trying to reach out to a venue or a place to try to bring a show in somewhere, and these directors and managers get calls from people all the time saying, "Hey, I'm great, I'm wonderful." Then that's great and that's wonderful. But anybody can call up and say, "I'm great and wonderful," but it creates a step up when another person can call and say, "Hey, this guy's great. You need to come check them out." And so that in itself helps tremendously. And there are a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that the entertainer really shouldn't be involved with. And I say that from a managerial or agent type point of view, where sometimes, not every time, but sometimes it's the manager or the agent's job to be the bad guy and play hardball. Mm-hmm. And go in and make demands and say, "Look, this is what we need to do this or it's not going to happen." Mm-hmm. And it's the entertainer's job to create such a rapport with a venue that they're like, "Okay, geez, I really don't know if I want to do this, but I like this guy and the audience loves him and we always get a good crowd when he's there." And mm-hmm. so it all comes out in the wash. Everybody has their own little jobs to do, but I've just always felt it's really the entertainer's job to always be the good guy. The entertainer should never be the bad guy. And trust me, and I know that you've been in this situation too, where you get mm-hmm. somewhere to a venue and it's nowhere near what you asked for.
No.
Were told was going to be there, but you have to do your show and you have to, because it's not the audience's fault that all that happened.
No.
And they still deserve to have a good show.
Do you know what I call most agents? You know what I call most agents?
Can you say it on the radio?
Oh yeah. I'm cleaning it up. But yeah. I call them Pinocchio. I call them Pinocchio because they tell more lies than they do anything else. What's the average day for you like? I want people out there to get an idea. You just don't roll out of bed at noon and go and do a gig. What's the average day for you and Krista like from beginning to end, early morning to late at night? Because I know you're always marketing. What's it like?
Honestly, Gary, she does so much of that. I will help her when I can in getting some busy work done for her, but she's the one that really does. She really does the lion's share of that work. She does all the write-ups. She does all the posting. She updates all of the pages. She creates events for when we're going to have shows come up, and she's taken that burden off of me completely. I don't have mm-hmm. to do any of that anymore. Mm-hmm. I have her deal with people on the phone now. That's taken me a little while. There are certain people that I still will deal with just because I have a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to do better by letting her, actually, you need to contact Krista for this kind of thing, because
right.
she updates the calendar and makes sure. And I mean, when I was doing it, I would too many times I'd find that I'd double booked myself somewhere. And, so I didn't want to deal with that. I didn't want to deal with that anymore. So she has really enabled me to just concentrate on making sure that whatever shows I have coming up, I've got either the band in order and we're rehearsed, or if I'm using background tracks that I can get my tracks in order and rehearse with them and make sure I have all my lyrics down, and things like that. So it really is. You know, if you're trying to do it on your own, I would tell somebody, you know, you got to have somebody helping you, because she really has taken a huge, huge burden off of my shoulders by doing all that.
Let's go back. We're talking to entertainer Peter Alden, who is a fabulous tribute artist, and we're going to get into the Crown Electric Company. The best advice you got from mom and dad?
Don't eat yellow snow.
Okay.
No, I took a while. I was waiting. I thought maybe you would get it. But, you know, I think it would have to be going back to what I had said earlier with my one director. He said, never, don't worry about being nervous before you go on. Mm-hmm. Be worried about not being nervous before you go on. That's really the one thing that I've held on to. And I've told other people that, many, many times. And I would have to say as pretty much close to that is something that both my father and Beverly Wolfe said to me at different times and in different ways, but their message was pretty much the same, because my father was choral inspired as far as what he directed. Mm-hmm. He was more on the choral end and not on the orchestral end, although he could direct orchestras. But they both had told me, don't fall in love with remedies. Just take care of your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, so many people go, oh, I have honey tea and lemon, or I have lemon water, or I have this or that, or mm-hmm. I take care of this and I do this. And they both said, basically, you know, remedies are there if you absolutely, absolutely need them. But what you really need to do is take care of your voice, vocalize when you need to. Mm-hmm. Don't do a lot of yelling and screaming you know, just take care of your voice. I in fact, one time read a story that when Kenny Rogers is on tour, he would not speak. He would literally communicate with a chalkboard.
Yes, he does. With people. Yes, he does. Because I've worked with Kenny. Yes. He will. And real quick, because we got about, we still got about 20, 25 minutes left, but I want to get to the Crown Electric Company and your time at Disney, et cetera. But what has been the biggest lesson that you've learned about Peter Alden as the performer that is also rolled over into your personal life?
I would have to say, it's a lesson that I'm still trying to learn, that Krista is doing her best to help me with.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that I'm still trying to learn that I haven't conquered yet is trying to not take everything so personally, to the extent that it creates angst in your life. And I mean, some days I'm better at it than others. But there are other times that it's just, it's very hard. So it's a lesson that I'm still trying to learn, because mm-hmm. obviously if you're going to put yourself out in a public performance, if you've chosen to be an entertainer or a politician or a speaker or whatever, and you're going to put yourself out there, you've more or less given the people, the audience, the right to say, yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Or I did it. I did like it. I loved it. And, I know I've talked to several entertainers who also have this same kind of it's almost a weird focus that you get where you could be in a concert hall that seats 400 people and 399 of them absolutely on their feet for you.
Yeah.
But you're focused like a laser beam on the one person who's sitting in the middle on their hands who's not enjoying it. And it's amazing how I, as an entertainer, and I've talked to others as well, can find those people.
See, for me,
you're not really looking for them, but it's like, wow.
See, for me, it was the opposite. It would be 399 sitting down on their hands and one guy standing up, bravo, bravo. You know, it would be just the opposite for me. Talk about what a kick it was to perform at when you were in Memphis at Liberty Land. You performed at the House of Blues to sell out audiences. I'm sure you got over to Graceland. I'm positive of that. Without even really asking very much. But the only thing you got to tell me, because I've never asked you this before, and I know this is off the cuff, please tell me you don't have any velvet paintings at home.
I do not. Not one.
Okay. Because I asked Wink Martindale that question off the air, because Wink could not be listening tonight, but he's going to listen another night. He recently had a tragic death in the family. Wink Martindale and Elvis Presley grew up more or less in the business together, and they were the best of friends. And Wink is a good friend of mine. But what was it like? Talk about performing in Memphis, where this gentleman grew up.
You know, it's kind of surreal in a way, because I was, again, when I was at Liberty Land, that was 98, I think it was the anniversary of the 68 comeback special. And Liberty Land was still there, and it was the theme park that Elvis had gone to. And that's the place that he would rent out for Lisa and his friends after hours. And at the time, it was the only venue that was sanctioned by Graceland and Elvis Presley Enterprises as something that they would advertise in their brochure and say that there was an Elvis entertainer there at the time. And so that was a neat thing. And so I performed on the same stage that a lot of different performers had. And a couple of the security guards that were there actually worked there when Elvis would come through. And so I got to talk to them and hear some stories. In fact, one of the security guards' name was Jimmy Carter. He had been a security guard out at Liberty Land, and then actually worked for Elvis for a little while. So I got to hear a lot of stories from him, and people who worked at Liberty Land had all kinds of stories. We just did I had a friend of mine, Steve Brannan, and I, one of the things I like to do is I like to do things a little bit differently, because, you know, so many of the Elvis shows are exactly the same and you know what you're going to get. And it's not a bad thing, but you know what you're going to get. And so we put together what we called Elvis Unplugged. You know, so it's just me and Steve with an acoustic guitar, and he would sing harmony vocals with me. And we just did all kinds of stuff from Elvis's 50s period, from the movies, from Vegas, just unplugged and got people clapping. And it was neat. We actually picked up, but we were supposed to be at the Tin Roof up in Memphis, and that was the show that we had planned on doing. And then we managed to pick up a few other shows, including at a place called the Rock and Roll Cafe that it used to be on. It used to be right across the street from Graceland, and they moved, and they've got a new location. And we were the first Elvis entertainment that they'd had out there since they moved. So that was kind of cool. And so it was neat because we got to play for a new audience. A lot of people who had never seen me before, who, you know, Elvis Week is neat for an Elvis impersonator, because people are looking for Elvis acts. That's what they want to see.
Well,
that's what they want to hear.
They're all over the place during Elvis Week. I can probably, every Elvis, by the way, every Elvis I've ever met, and by the way, we're talking to entertainer Peter Alden. You can get a hold of him at peteraldenentertainment.com, peteraldenlive.com. You can catch some cuts that are on there. He's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Every Elvis impersonator that I've ever met, except for yourself, Now, I don't know if you've ever won any awards for it or anything, and I've never asked, but they all have been, yes, Priscilla has crowned me as the best Elvis impersonator. And I'm thinking now, I don't know Priscilla very well, but I know Wink and I talked about it off the air. And you know, it's okay. He would have loved all of you guys very, very much. He was really down to earth. If his buddies were in serious financial trouble, he would help them out. You know, a lot of people don't realize he wasn't wealthy when he died.
No, he was. That's why he had to go back out on tour, because he was such a generous man, and he grew up with nothing, and he knew what it was like to have nothing, and he never wanted anybody to have to experience that. And he took it upon himself to try to do that. So he gave away much, much more than I think even a lot of people know. And it's sad that he had to towards the end there, he had to work so hard. Cause I think, I honestly think it would have been nice for him to take some time off. I think he needed to recharge his batteries.
Well, he got himself involved in some things, and we're not going to get into that. But let's just say that the end of his life, as Wayne Newton said to me, wasn't what it should have been. And he got himself caught up. Michael Jackson did the same thing in a sense. And, you know, it's a shame that these great entertainers all pass away. And it truly, truly is the same. The only thing that I don't care for with a lot of impersonators in general is that they don't do their homework. When you went to work for Legends, I know you have to be one of the best in the country. I auditioned for them. They wanted me to MC their shows. But unfortunately, as you know, oh too well, when I left Las Vegas, I left that part of my life kind of behind. Right. I did a little bit when I first moved to Florida, back to Florida, but I kind of said, you know, I'm moving in another direction now. And I've got to do it. 6 months. I was first 6 months here. I did it. But when you go to work for Legends, folks, it's one of the biggest shows in Las Vegas, or was. I don't know if it still exists or not. But you better be one of the best. Only the best of the best gets to work for or even audition for Legends. So talk about that process for the kids out there who are thinking about they want to audition for something like that, or they think they're good at it. Talk about the preparation you have to do and the years you put in even before you got to the point where you could audition for Legends.
Oh yeah. They are still in existence. I was again fortunate to be there when Jon Stewart, who created the show.
Right.
He was a Vegas performer himself, and he grew up in this as a performer. And so he understood performers, and he designed Legends in Concert around Elvis's Vegas show. That's where the concept came from. Mm-hmm. And I remember that they wanted us to be that act for 15 or 20 minutes we were on. We had to speak in first person. And you couldn't even call for an audition. You would have to send them a videotape.
Mm-hmm.
And if they wanted to see more, they would then call you in to audition. And at the time, when I say it was Valhalla for impersonators, it really was simply because the show was not open to every type of tribute act there were at the time. There was a time that it was only acts who were no longer here, like Elvis or Buddy Holly or Marilyn Monroe, Nat King Cole. And then it started to expand slowly to people who, although they were still living, could still quite honestly, based on their body of work, could be considered legends, like Neil Diamond or Cher or Michael Jackson or somebody like that. They really, their point was that each act would build on the next one, so that even if when you came in and started watching the show, even if you weren't into this whole impersonator thing, by the end of the show, you had bought this thing, hook, line, and sinker, and these really were the people who were there. were seeing Elvis and Buddy Holly and Marilyn Monroe, and it was just so well produced and orchestrated. And again, with shows, Jon Stewart understood you can't do a different show every night. You got to find a show, find a formula, and work that formula. It's what Dean Martin did. It's what Frank Sinatra, the Rat Pack, they were certainly scripted.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that you had a script to work with, but this is the way the Legends and Concerts show was laid out. So when you're these acts, these are the songs you're gonna do, and it doesn't deviate from that, which works because you've got a different audience there every night for the most part.
Yep.
And as a performer, and you know this, Gary, as a performer, the more you do something, the better at it you're gonna get.
One would hope. In my case, like I said, it was the 399 people sitting on their hands and one guy going, "Yay!" I got three times asked by Jon Stewart to audition while I was still actively working, and I kept turning it down. I didn't want to be tied down because Marcel and I were doing a lot of corporate work, and we were making more money on the road than we were if we stayed in Las Vegas. And finally, John came to me. He didn't know I was leaving town. And he said, I just want you to go in and talk to them. You don't even have to audition. You're in. Just go and talk to them. Even though I have nothing to do with the show anymore, Gary, which he didn't, and he doesn't now anymore. Right. He said, just go in and talk to them. It's yours. They're looking for an MC. I told him how great your act is. And a couple of them that run the show now have seen you and they like you. So just go in. And I said, John, I'm leaving town. I'm moving back to Florida, and that's it. I'm going to, for a few months, I have a few contracts. And I got to tell you, who was a big help to me was Bea Vogelman when I first got to Las Vegas, the late Bea Vogelman. She introduced me to everybody around town, and she was a gracious lady. But it takes years and years and years to get to the point where you can do something like that. And the best of the best either are in Vegas or perform in Vegas. If you aren't good, I tell young people when I give advice, if they ever ask or they used to ask, I used to say, if you cannot produce, get out of here fast, because they'll run you over faster than a car coming at you down the street. It's a fast paced. Oh, yeah, it's fast paced. And the minute you get on stage, you better get it, and you better get it quick. Or you're done. But when I watched you, and I watch other really great entertainers, and I've had the pleasure of watching the real things. I knew Frank, Sammy, and Dean. I never watched Elvis. But when I watch you perform, and there's only a handful of performers that I really like to watch, but you're one of them, I just feel so comfortable. And you're right. The audience, after the end of a show at Legends, or the one that was at the Stratosphere for so very long, they start to think, wait a minute, is that really Elvis? I mean, I know he's dead, but is that really Elvis? That's how great, ladies and gentlemen, people like Peter and others are at what they do. They work and they hone their craft. Let's talk. We've got about 8-9 minutes left here. You have other shows that you're involved in. You do Ricky Nelson. You also have a Roy Orbison thing with another gentleman, Brian McCullough, I believe, Elvis and Roy, the Lost Concert. How did that concept come about?
Brian and I were both working on the cruise ships for Legends and Concert, as a matter of fact. And we started talking, we got to be good friends, because when you're on the ship for 7 straight days.
Oh yeah.
You
I spent 2.5 years.
Unless you want your entire, paycheck to go to the bar tab, you got to start thinking about other things that you want to do. So we started talking about how Elvis and Roy had been friends, and wouldn't it be kind of cool? Because Elvis and Roy had talked about doing a show. And Roy wrote Only the Lonely with Elvis in mind. And Elvis wasn't there when Roy came by to present it to him. But, we came upon the concept. We actually set it in Memphis in 1976 as, that Roy was in town in Memphis to celebrate the anniversary of Sun Records. And so while the rest of the country was celebrating its bicentennial, Memphis was celebrating its bicentennial. And so Roy Orbison was there, and then we set it up that Elvis would be a special guest. And we had some artificial radio jingles and things put together for it. And I did some arrangements of some Elvis stuff and some Roy stuff together so that we could be out singing together as opposed to just, oh, here's Elvis and here's Roy. And now they're going to sing Over the Rainbow together. Mm-hmm. I arranged some medleys of songs that they both did. And so we got a chance to be on stage singing together, doing some things. And so
I love Roy Orbison. I have his Black and White, and I listen to that, and I love watching it. And in the few minutes that we have left, talk about the Crown Electric Company, where the name came from. And by the way, if you want to book Peter, just get a hold of his assistant Krista at peterallenentertainment.com or Peter AldenLive.com, PeterAldenEntertainment.com. I believe the phone numbers to contact you or a way for people to contact you is on both of those sites, is it not?
Correct. Yes, it is.
Yeah. So check it out. If you're looking for a great guy to entertain you, talk about the Crown Electric Company, where that name came from, and the 50s and 60s music you do.
Well, that was the Crown Electric Company band. Was a band that Brian and I put together for the Elvis and Roy show, actually, when we were up in Nashville. The anchor of that band was our drummer, David Fontana, whose father was DJ Fontana, Elvis's original drummer from 1955 to about 1968. And so I've used Crown Electric Company to record several CDs and to back me up on several Elvis shows through the years. The name came from, it was basically the first job that Elvis had when he was a teenager growing up in Memphis. He was studying to be an electrician, and he got a job at the Crown Electric Company driving a truck and learning how to be an electrician. And we thought that would be a perfect name because we were doing rockabilly. Mm-hmm. Music. So we thought, okay, well, Crown Electric Company, Johnny and Dorsey Burnett, who also recorded at Sun Records, they also worked at Crown Electric Company. And so Crown Electric Company kind of has its roots in rockabilly in Memphis. And so we kind of liked it. And, I still keep up with those guys occasionally. I have another band here that I use called the Corvairs, and we do a show called Mr. 57, mm-hmm. which is a salute to our tag for that is before there was American Idol, there was American Bandstand. So we salute the idols of Bandstand mm-hmm. From the 50s and 60s and early 70s, and we do a little bit of everything. I get to highlight the guys in the band. They all are very talented musicians in their own rights, and so we like to, we do a semi-regular thing at the Tin Roof in Orlando, and we do some other corporate things and private parties and private events.
I told Vicky she ought to get you over here to the Cocoa Beach, Melbourne area. People will go crazy for you over here. Peter,
absolutely.
We're talking to entertainer Peter Alden. You can get a hold of him at peteraldenentertainment.com, peteraldenlive.com. With about a minute to go, we're really kind of running a little over, but that's okay. When it's all said and done, Peter Alden, who are you, and what do you want people to remember about you the most?
I've gotten to a point in my life where I would like people to remember me as a guy who did a great tribute to Elvis, but was also a fantastic entertainer in his own right. And someone that we would go to see regardless of whether I was doing Elvis music or 50s and 60s or the Beach Boys or Ricky Nelson or whatever. The people just enjoyed going to see my shows and seeing me for me. You know, that I just hope that I would make people happy. That's really all I can ask for, is that I touch people in a positive way, whether I hear about it or know about it or learn about it. You know, that's not always the case, but I would like to think that I've touched people in a positive way, and that when they think on me or my music or listen to my music, it brings back good memories.
He is Peter Alden, extraordinary entertainer, gentleman, and a good friend to me. Contact him at peteraldenentertainment.com, peteraldenlive.com. Book this man. Have him at your next event. I'm going to tell you something. He will dazzle the crowd, whether he's Elvis, whether he's himself doing rockabilly, 50s, 60s style music, you name it. He is The best. And Peter Alden, I want to thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your day to join us here tonight on The Express. I will be in touch very soon, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Gary. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
All right, and give Krista my best, would you please?
Will do.
All right, good night, sir. And to all of you out there for taking a few minutes out of your day to join us here, I thank you so much. Without you, I could not be. Please go on my YouTube.com channel and go to Gary Allen The Express, or when you see my thing coming up on your Facebook, click on that. I need all the clicks I can get. I don't get anything out of it that I'm really aware of, except, you know, more people are interested. Thursday night at 7 o'clock on Diversity Broadcast Network, you'll be able to hear this show again, as well as on YouTube and on Progressive Voices and TuneIn and a few other places. Until next week, please be safe, be happy, and take care of yourselves and one another. Good night.
You've been listening to The Express with Gary Allen. Join us here every Tuesday night at 10 for more captivating talk with Gary Allen. See you next time on The Express.